Welcome to Comics.
Episode 264. This week, we talk about
Wubbable Oath.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
I can't wait for that, though. People tell me all the time, you get that condescending, oh, cherish these moments because they'll never come again. I'm like, I'm going to have more fucking kids, and by the way, right now sucks. Like, I'm cleaning shit off of somebody else's ass, and that sucks. Like, yes, it's diapers, and it's all part of the experience of, and you go to expect it, and yes, but no, I'm cleaning shit off of somebody else's ass. There's no way around it. And I hate it. And I can't wait for it to be over. So once I have a 5-year-old instead of a 7-month-old, I'll be a lot happier. And I'm planning on having more kids. So if this is special, it'll be special again next year with the next kid.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. Like, and that's the thing. Kids are pretty sweet up until... Well, you know, they can be sweet for their entire lives. It just depends on the person.
Yeah.
So there's that. But, like, I think you get, like, that little kid sweetness up until they hit teenage years.
Yeah, I am strangely optimistic about teenage years because I'm a nerd, and in my experience, the nerdy kids have a lot better experience in teenage years because they actively do things that engage in a way that is suitable for almost everyone. So, like,
yeah. In
high school, my kids and I are going to play D&D. And, like, that's what we're going to do Sunday night, is play D&D together. And that's going to be fucking awesome. We're going to have family D&D, or some bullshit like that, you know? And I think, classically speaking, most, like, families have a hard time getting their kids together for, like, dinner. You know, like, if I was raising a family of just whatever, like, non-nerdy kids like jocks, like, oh, we go to a football practice on Sunday, Johnny, and I'll be here reading a book. I don't know. I just feel like being a nerd is going to help so much.
Like, I don't know. I know some people, they just want kids, and it's a life goal for me that never was the case. But the idea of having teenage kids sounds pretty cool.
Right? Because they're people that you can hang out with and do fun things with.
I'm not good with younger children, so.
Was that the nope?
Yeah, that was the nope.
That's the driving force of the nope. Well, is, what do I do with a 2-year-old?
I'm not great with kids until they're like 13 or 14.
Yeah, and for me, it's like 8 to 10.
Yeah, see, that's better. That's better.
Just like, I was asking David, like, how long is it until Lucas can play X-Wing Minis with us? And David's like, he's got a good handle on Candyland right now. And I'm like, oh my god, it took you 5 fucking years to get to Candyland? Oh, like, that kills me.
Although, you hear about stuff, like, I listened to the Penny Arcade podcast, and Mike Kruger, like, talks about his kids. And his son, I think, is, like, 7 or 8. And apparently the kid's, like, actually quite good at Overwatch.
Nice.
I'm like, yeah, there we go. But it's just, I'm all for adoption. I don't want to. Or, like, test tube babies grown in a tank. Tank is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to bear the fruit of my womb. It sounds awful. Not interested.
Having seen it in person, people talk about the miracle of childbirth and how it's disgusting but glorious. I can say, no, it looks painful and horrendous and nasty and disgusting.
Well, I know a lot of people...
I am so glad I have a penis.
I know a lot of people who, you know, like, I don't think anyone particularly enjoys childbirth. But I know a lot of people enjoy pregnancy, and I know right now that is not for me. I don't have any desire to, like, grow a child or have another person be a part of me. No, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's horrible too. My sister is somebody who likes being pregnant, and one of my best friends, Denise, also likes being pregnant. But yeah, no. Just no. It seems that's another thing that just seems fucking horrible. Like, and probably because I don't know when we met, but there was a time, Jen, when I weighed almost 400 pounds. And now I weigh 240-ish. And I can tell you, being it, like, and that was like just kind of extra weight all over me and not just like in a basketball in front of me in an awkward shape, you know? But like, even the equal distribution was fucking terrible. And I, no, even with the idea that it ends, just no, it's not. It's fucking terrible. There's no way around it. It's just fucking terrible.
I mean, I think it's just for some people and not for others. I've definitely encountered the thing where people are kind of like of the assumption, oh, you're a woman, you must want to be pregnant. That's so special. And I'm like, nah, that's for other ladies who do want that, which is cool for them.
Right. Like the assumption is, oh, you're a woman, so you must want this special experience that only women can have as a part of your life. Like, that's the other thing you get, is, oh, the special bond between a mother and child. It's something only a mother knows because the child was inside of her. And part of me is like, yeah, but, like, as a dude, I mean, I could stick my penis in a watermelon, and that's a unique experience I get to have as a man, right? But I have no compulsion to do that, and honestly, it sounds horrible.
Okay, that's actually my normal response if it's someone that I don't mind, like, being slightly offensive around, is, ah, so you must want prostate cancer. I can't get it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like...
life experience, Andy.
Like, just because it's a special experience that is unique to your gender doesn't mean that it's one that you... Like, I know a lot... Personally know many dudes, not many, I don't want to get too weird. I personally know at least a couple dudes who have stuck their penis in a vacuum cleaner, like the vacuum hose part. Mm. And that seems to be, for a lot of men, a unique part of the male experience. And I never did that, and I'm really glad I didn't. And to me, that's rather analogous to being pregnant. I don't know, maybe something about being a dude. I can only build analogies to fucking things, but like...
It just seems unwise, that one.
I don't know. Say. Just, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to talk about this week's comic? Speaking of fucking things.
Have we lost David entirely?
I'm giving up on David. He can join in when he's ready.
Okay.
David's having a hard time wrangling his kids, so we're just going to get rolling.
This week's comic.
This week, we read We led Lovable. Jesus Christ, this is going to kill me all friggin' night. This week, we read Lovable Oaf, written by... Shit, I didn't write it down. Do you know who?
Yes. It was written by Ed Luce.
All right, Ed Luce. Eddie, my man, Eddie boy. This is, Oh, by the way, Jen is back. And
hello.
This is going to be one with all of us together again, but, you know, David with his kids, so now it's me and Jenny. Like, it was me and Jen, and then it was me and David. And this is supposed to be the reunion, but it's back to me and Jen. I don't know. We'll have a regular episode with all three of us someday. I don't know. Whenever. But yeah, Lovable Oaf. And I thought this would be a nice change of pace after last week when we read Black River, because Black River is fucking horrendous on your soul. It was well made, but just soul-crushing. And this, I thought, would be really uplifting, and instead, not that it wasn't uplifting, it was really cute, but for half of it, I was just thoroughly confused. That whole second half of the short stories.
I liked some of those. Those are great.
Yeah, some of them were cute and fun, but I was, I don't know. For a good chunk of this, I was like, what the fuck is going on right now?
I really enjoyed this. I thought it was adorable. It's just the, you know, Oaf, he's lovable, right?
Yes, he is.
But he's a nice, goofy protagonist, very lighthearted. And, like, I didn't know what we'd be, like actually reading, because I knew that he was a gay wrestler who lived in San Francisco and had a bunch of cats. But I was thinking, oh, maybe it will focus more on like the wrestling aspect, but this is just like his quest for love, and I thought it was really cute.
Yeah.
Because he just, I like how he like creepy stalks Eiffel.
Yes. Goes to the concert, buys his band shirt. Yeah, that was pretty cute. And actually, you know, one of the things I was thinking about with this comic, so we've talked about this before with Midnighter, I think it was, how there's this prevailing idea that the gay culture is just obsessed with overt sexuality. Or like, that's the way to show that somebody's gay is having overt sexuality. And between recording that and recording this, I had a conversation with a gay friend of mine. Not to be like, I have a gay friend. Not to trample that card. But like, I had a conversation about it, and he was like, you know, for a shockingly large number of gay men, it is a part of the culture, and that's part of what attracts them to the culture, is being able to be overt and open about who you are as a person, including your sexual needs. Like, the way we treat homosexuality in this culture in America forces you to have a level of openness you wouldn't normally have, and that has shifted the culture to being open about itself within the subculture. And I was like, that's really interesting. Like, maybe they wouldn't be like so open and overt about their sexuality if we didn't force them into it. And he was explaining, but it leaves like very little room for guys like him and guys like Lovable Oaf, who are just normal people who happen to be gay, and he's looking for a long-term happy relationship. And like, he goes to the gym and he goes to these places, and this like way too overt and open sexuality of the culture just is like constantly smacking him in the face. I was like right in the middle of saying that, and I realized that sounds really like, it's not the reason he's in gay culture. He's in gay culture because he's gay and he lives in San Francisco, and all of these things just kind of keep coming up. And like, for him, that's part of the reason he was iffy about Eiffel. I don't think he cared that Eiffel was in the band. I don't think he cared that Eiffel was sleeping around. I think he didn't want his image of Eiffel to be like those people that he doesn't like in his gay culture. I think that's why, like, when his ex-boyfriend was telling him about the band members and how he's, you know, involved with all of them, I think that's what he was worried about. Is Eiffel one of those people that I don't like from the gym?
That makes sense, because he was very much, like, is this the guy I thought he was? Because he kind of made the mistake of not knowing Eiffel, but falling in love with this image he had of him.
Yeah.
And that's never good on anyone, right? But I think it worked out here, because the image wasn't too far off, and I think Oaf was also able to, like, realize that he was doing that.
Yeah.
What was it? In the bios at the very end, they have a profile on Oaf, and I think, or no, they, maybe it was in the definitions of what an Oaf is.
Could be.
And one of those, it was like, has a small social circle of close friends. And I think that's kind of part of it. Like, he, you know, he goes to the bar, and, you know, people are hitting on him and saying shit to him, and he's like, it seems like he's more like one of those people who isn't, just like as a person, big on going out and meeting strangers and, you know, hooking up with people he's never met, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, he's got his cats.
Yes. He has a lot of cats. Jesus.
Yeah. And his father has a lot of cats too.
Well, he and his dad run the cat orphanage together, right?
Yeah. Well, his dad, yeah, they run the cat orphanage together, except Oaf has a bunch that he keeps at home as pets. And the orphanage, I think, are, I'm guessing you could adopt them, or it's a different setup. So it's not all in one location.
Yeah.
So the orphanage cats are, their faces are styled after makeup from rock and music artists.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of cool. But then they have like a gang structure out in that yard.
They're vicious.
It was crazy. Like, and I, That's the one of the things I want to reread in this comic. There's got to be some commentary that Ed Luce is making. I forgot his last name. I was about to just call him Ed. There's got to be some commentary that Ed Luce is making about the cat, like having the cats fight like that and be vicious, and the commentary he's making with Oaf and how he's walking around the world. There has to be something more there than just, oh my god, vicious cats. And like Pavel, I really want to know, like, why Pavel was the way he was and why he was there. I get the feeling there's a layer of complexity to this comic that I didn't interact with because I was just like, the premise of this comic is so just fun and light that then when you get to stuff like Pavel, you're not prepared for it. So I wasn't thinking critically and I was just like, wait, what's going on with Pavel? Why is this? Like, it hits you on another level that I wasn't intellectually prepared for at the time. So I want to reread it and like try to figure out why the fuck Pavel is crazy.
So, for Pavel, like, when we first see him in that interlude, he's being attacked by, like, dick monsters, basically. Yes. And I was just like, okay, this cat's insane. But then, you know, we see the part where the doll is telling Pavel, you're gonna be evil. And Pavel, like, kind of goes nuts.
Yeah.
But then later, another doll takes Ishii's knives and is brandishing them at the ex-boyfriend. So I'm thinking, maybe these dolls...
The dolls are evil?
Yeah, I think the dolls are evil. Like, I don't think Oaf intends that. And I think there's a note in the very back about the dolls where it's like, they're actually super evil because you can't be as good as Oaf and only put good vibes into the universe. He has to produce something evil as well, even though he doesn't know it. And I love that, like... He's so good that the dolls he makes have to counteract it by coming to life and causing chaos.
And they are creepy as hell.
Yes, they are.
Doesn't somebody... Well, also, I think Eiffel almost calls it a creepy doll and then catches himself.
But he seems to like it, too. Like, that's the funny part. Well, you know what's creepy? Stuffing a doll with your own hair. It's really creepy.
What makes it so soft? Natural fibers?
Yeah. But, it's not just, like, the doll making, either. Like, there's little ticks around that. But, like, Oaf doesn't say, it's my hair. He says hairs, plural. There's, like, a cuteness to the way he talks.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even pinpoint it, because it's not, like, an accent or something. It's the kind of, like, gruff manner of speaking. It's, like, very ungrammatical. But at the same time, it's adorable.
And it totally belies who he is, too, because he's very cultured. Not just in, like, his taste in music, but also the fight that he has that we get a flashback for with the French wrestler.
Yeah.
And he's like, I love France. When I went and visited, it was glorious. And, like, I love your stinky, soft cheeses. And he's, like, apologizing left and right. And through his apologies, you see that he is... cultured, you know, like he's familiar with France and its people and the thing, like, and he's cultured in a way that he recognizes that character is a caricature, but there's a person under that, and, you know, apologize and explain, you know, I went to France and it was beautiful and I really liked it.
Well, the whole thing too there is, like, he's supposed to be a heel for wrestling, and he knows that the French guy is, but, like, he's very open about, like, yeah, it's all fake, and we're all having sex in the background.
Yeah.
So, I just, like, he gets in the ring, and he's, like, this satanic goat man, but then he's, like, I'm so sorry.
After raining blood from his horns.
Yeah. He's, like, how you doing, man? Having a good day? Like, I think it's even better, too, because he keeps it a secret.
Yeah.
Right, like, and you don't really know if it's the company, like the wrestling producers who are making him, or if he's just, like, he doesn't want people to know that part of his personality.
Well, I think it's, I don't know, I think there's, didn't he say there's some stalemate that he has with the wrestling production company?
Yeah, because he was gonna come out and write a memoir about how it was all rigged.
How it was all rigged and everybody's just fucking in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I imagine he just, after that, he probably just wants to lay low and hang out with his cats and try to find love.
Yeah. So what did you think of this love story?
I don't want to say I'm disappointed that it didn't work out. Because the whole time he's crushing on him, I had the same feeling you had. Like, oh no, he's building up an image in his head about Eiffel without ever having met him. And in my experience, that never works out well. If one person yeah. builds an image of another person in their head and then doesn't bother to actually, you know, talk to that person and meet them, figure them out, like, that shouldn't end well. So it's kind of surprising to me that it does. And I think it ends well just because Oaf is so lovable. And the things that Oaf likes about Eiffel are present. There's other things there too. And I think Oaf's lovable nature bends Eiffel to his will a little bit. Like, Eiffel went into that date only looking for, like, a cheap hookup, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what Eiffel went into it wanting. And through Oaf being charming and lovable, Oaf, you know, turned it into a relationship. So I think it's one of those things where Oaf is making Eiffel a better man. And it kind of works out, even though it's not supposed to, which is fine. That's a different kind of, like, it's a different kind of love story, too. It doesn't have to be match made in heaven, and it doesn't have to be fuck-ups. It can be, you know, something where there's mishandled expectations on both parties, and it works out anyway. That happens, too. So yeah. It's a worthwhile love story that has its place.
What I like about it is I feel like they actually do have common ground. So Eiffel goes in, like you said, for the hookup. And Oaf is like, I love you, man. But then they actually sit down to dinner and they find out that they like each other, like, as mm-hmm. people. Which I think a lot of the time when you have any kind of romantic story, that aspect is missing. And it's more like, like, oh, these people are meant to be together because the narrative says that they should be. Whereas here, it's like, you know, we don't know if Oaf is gonna end up with Eiffel or if it's gonna, like, crash and burn. Because maybe, you know, Eiffel would be like, oh, you're a creepy stalker, go the fuck away.
Yeah, and we get a lot of, I like that. In the course of seeing the development of their date and what ends up being their relationship, we get their previous breakups and first dates,
mm-hmm.
Which is a good way to attach to them and show you how what they're doing is different. Like, Oafs are all about the ways in which other people cannot come to grips with his own personality. And Eiffel's is kind of the opposite, is how he can't accept other people for who they are. He's only wanting to use them for his purposes. And so it's nice that in the end they fit each other in a weird kind of way.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I think part of it, too, is it really shows their personalities, because for Oaf, it's all first dates. You get this kind of sense of, like, innocence. Especially, like, that very first high school one where they're, like, trying to make out and failing horribly. The guy loses his teeth.
Yes, that one's great.
He's like, oh no, senior portraits are next week.
What are we gonna do?
Yeah, I thought that was really cute. But then it kind of moves on to, like, oh, the guy who talks about how much he hates the Smiths. And Oaf doesn't even get mad. He's just like, okay, well, bye.
Then peace.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's not that he's mad. He's just like, it seems like he doesn't think they're going to have anything in common. So there's a lot of, like, I guess kind of like a sad sweetness to all of this, where it's like, oh, Oaf is innocent and he's had really bad luck in the dating scene. He's had a lot of, like, bad mishaps. I think my favorite is when the guy next to him is like, oh, I love this Oaf so much. He's so wonderful. I wonder if we can make this long term. And Oaf rolls over and almost kills him. And he's like, and that's it. But
Which what I love is later on we see Oaf sleeping on top of Eiffel that way, and Eiffel's just like not bothered.
Yeah, well, Eiffel's bothered, but he's he's not going home in an ambulance. So I like that though because it's kind of like Oaf can't help it, and the other people. It's not that they dislike him; they dislike his Oafishness.
Yeah.
In a lot of the scenes, right? Because they're like, you're such a cool person. But then some mishap occurs, and it just doesn't work. It's never, like, a problem with Oaf, per se. Whereas for Eiffel, the breakups, well, a breakup intrinsically tends to be, you know, people finding an issue with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like... Most of the Eiffel ones are people kind of judging Eiffel in the same way. So, like, the first one's the girl who's like, are you gay? Because that would explain a lot.
That one's great, because
she
is super butch.
Yeah.
she is what you would think a gay guy would date if he didn't know he was gay.
Yeah. I love her, like... That explains a lot. Are you crying?
Yeah.
And then, let's see, I think his next breakup is the guy who is saying, like, you're not big and hairy enough for me, and I just am not physically attracted to you.
I want big hairy dudes.
Yeah, that's, like, really sad in and of itself, but at the same time... So I guess it does actually mirror Oaf's, but it seems a little less... I don't know, it seems sadder and darker to me. Maybe it's because it's like a breakup as opposed to just a first date gone awry.
Yeah, and I mean they both have ones that are sad.
Yeah.
For me, the one that really, I was like, this is just kind of fun and interesting, and the comic is, last week when we read Black River, I said the art is like, when I think of an indie comic... This is what I think of when I think of indie comic art, and like when I go to Ape Expo, this is what I expect almost all the artist booths to look like. And Wovable Oaf is like that too. Like, this is indie comic book art, in big quotes, in my mind. Mm. But the one where, and this is where they mirror too, the one where Oaf is getting broken up with over the phone, because Oaf wants to be monogamous.
Oh, yeah. That one was really sad.
That one, the art is, the art's fantastic because it's just the back of Oaf. And in the foreground, the obvious thing is the cat's coming in. Except it's four panels, and in the first panel, the back of his head has two lines, right? Mm-hmm. Like the first ridge and then like a roll. And then in the second panel, the roll is gone, and you only see the first ridge. And then on the third panel, both lines are gone. And then in the fourth panel, his head is just totally sunken down. And, like, his shoulders stoop down as the call goes on. You see less and less of his arms, because it's just the really subtle but wonderful way that the body language is shown panel to panel as it's going on. Just you... It does a great way of showing you his utter disappointment because he was so excited that he thought he... And this is something... I mean, this is something I think a lot of people have experienced. You know, you meet somebody, you go on a date or two or three, and you really, really like this person, and maybe to your own detriment, you get too excited. And you start thinking too far ahead. And instead of keeping that inside... and letting it kind of progress on its own, you let it slip maybe once or twice. And that's all it took for Oaf. It slipped once. And this guy was just like, whoa, that's more serious than I want to be. And by the end of the call, the guy is like, but, you know, if you want to be friends in case you ever want to hook up, you know, because the sex was really good, you know, there's my number. And that's just when Oaf is completely disappointed, because that is like the opposite of everything he wants.
Yeah, he wants romance. He wants a long-term thing. And I didn't notice that about the art the first time, but it's so true. Like, and man, what's sad about it too is the guy is actually trying to be nice.
Yep.
Like, you know, he actually probably does want to be Oaf's friend, and it's a pretty nice voicemail explanation. Because I think, you know, people could just be like, it's not working out, bye.
Yeah.
But he tells him why, and he's honest, and then he's like, I like you, we should be friends. But it's still so sad because, I don't know, one-sided romance is, I think, one of the saddest things just, like, to view for me. It always breaks my heart.
Yeah. And I think that is the analogous breakup with Eiffel for the gay guy who's into bears.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a lack of matchup in the expectation of the relationship. Or no, maybe it's not that one. I think that one might even be Hammond. The different expectations of what the relationship is supposed to be.
Or you could even argue that it's what's his name? Easy, the rival lead singer.
Oh yeah.
Because it sounds
that's
like
the one I was forgetting.
Yeah, they were in the same band, and then he's like, your guitar playing is shit, you're singing shit, you're out of the band, because we're done, you're out of the band. And it seems like, to Eiffel, the band is really important to him.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, that's something that's just, that's deeply ingrained in who he is. Of course it would be crushing to not only be, like, band dumped, but dumped. Yeah. And the guy's so mean when he does it, too. That's the thing. Like you said, the guy who didn't want to be with Eiffel because he wasn't meeting physical expectations was really nice about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty fair, but the guitarist guy is just like, fuck off.
Yeah. I don't want you interfering with my music.
Yeah.
Suck a dick and leave.
Although, you know, I kind of... Did you read all the little interludes about how Eiffel got the band together?
Yes.
Yes, it's like, I kind of get how he ends up in that position, though.
Oh,
because
yeah.
If you're going to, like, sleep with all your band members.
Well, it's the other way around, right? Like, mm-hmm. He's not sleeping with the band members. He's sleeping with people, and then they turn into band members.
Yeah. Although, what was it? Attila. He won't sleep with Attila. And he's like, sexual tension makes for good music.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Poor Attila.
Attila's just like, he is the bitch of that band.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liked him, though. Like, I thought his character would be super annoying, but he's just kind of sad instead.
Which one is the one that later on teaches their, like, runs the practice and during one of the short stories... runs the practice and tries to give them inspirations to be better musicians.
That was Attila.
That was Attila, yeah. Was
yeah, when he's like, channel these rock stars.
Yeah, that one was good. That was fun.
I liked that. I liked the one where they're doing the photo shoot for the album cover.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is too conceptual, but it's actually...
It's not conceptual at all.
No, and for the band name, it's incredibly fitting.
Like... That's also, they're just not smart, those band members.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because earlier in the comic, you see Eiffel, they go to, as part of the date, they go to that shitty art show, and Oaf has to buy that stupid graffiti art. And Eiffel's just like, laughing and shitting on the faux intellectualism of everything, and then that's his album cover. Like, come on. You are also a faux intellectual.
Yeah. I think there is another scene where it showed something similar. I lost it. Oh, no, it wasn't faux intellectualism, that's it. When he was like, you're gonna sacrifice your beards to
the dark lord
for inspiration.
Yeah, and then he accidentally breaks the razor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's some bullshit. That would have made him go first.
That was... Yeah.
That's just some bullshit.
And he blames the drummer, too. He, like, pulls out the cord, and he's like, oh, look, you clogged it.
So yeah, he blames Attila. That's right.
Yeah. Or no, was it Attila? No. Or I thought it was Azeed? Was that his name?
The creepy looking one.
The one who goes around naked as performance art.
Oh, yeah, right, that guy.
Yeah, that one.
I get them mixed up.
Yeah, I mix up the guitarist and the bassist because they look very similar to me.
Yes.
But well, then I...
Eiffel has a type. They're all oafs.
Yeah. But it's funny, like, they're all very different types of oafs because, like, mm-hmm. I think it was the bassist? Yudaho.
Yeah, Yudaho.
Also, yes, that name. Thank you. It's funny in that he goes for, like, the massage with Eiffel. That's how they meet. And then he just starts psychoanalyzing him.
Yes.
Where that he goes, yeah. I thought, I don't know, like, I feel like in this discussion, a lot of what we're doing is recounting scenes, but I think a lot of these scenes, like, they all come together to make a really charming comic. Like, I love the idea of a guy pulling together all these people he's sleeping with to form a, what was it? Was it disco screamcore?
There's all the other different genres.
He's just like, hey, you want to be in a band? Which I think is actually a fairly common question in certain scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's so charming he does this, and then they're all so different from each other. Like, the scene with the drummer where the guy's just, like, tapping out a rhythm on his butt, and he's like, are you gonna get going back there? And then he pauses, and he's like, hey, wait a second.
You wouldn't be a bad drummer.
Yeah, they're just, like, sweet little stories with nice punchlines, I feel.
So that okay. Is this... We talked a couple weeks ago about, when we read Witches, David and I, we talked about the horror genre. And the comparisons between comic book horror and film and television horror as a genre. Is this a comic book rom-com?
I think it might be.
Because I don't think I've read many comic book rom-coms.
It's very episodic.
And it's very, you know, two opposites attract and find love in a world that they shouldn't or whatever.
Yeah. And the side cast, like, all the side characters are very quirky, but delightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
Except there's, like, a couple who are the clear villains. You know, like, Hammond. The chef.
Yeah,
Hammond, and then, Easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, no, this very well could be called that, I think.
I think that was part of my confusion, because I started out when we were talking saying, I don't know what the fuck I was reading. And I think that was kind of it. Like, this just felt like, it felt for a while really aimless. And I think now that I've put that label of rom, like, now that I've labeled it, I know what it is. But I think now that we've talked about it a bit more, and I think I'm looking at it through that lens, that whole structure in the beginning makes more sense too, like just the cats, and, you know, you have to establish Oaf as a character and make him likable and have the, not the chance meeting, what is the, there's a phrase for it in rom-coms, the cute ending, or the cute encounter, I think it's called, cute meet. Yeah, cute meet.
I've never heard that.
You haven't heard that? So, like, in rom-coms, when the couple first meets in a really cute kind of way, it's called a cute meet.
Ah, okay. I mean, that's very literal.
Yes. So what Oaf and Eiffel's cute meet is, Oaf getting his friends to tell Eiffel that he likes him.
Yes. I actually really liked that scene where it looks like they're about to beat the shit out of Eiffel.
Yep.
And then they're like, here's our friend's number. You should call him. We think you'd, but the best part is, like, it's not even a threat. Like, you better call him. It's, we think you'd make a cute couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. that was a good one.
That's very cute meat.
Well, the best part about it too is also how it's drawn. So, like, it shows Eiffel and he's on his phone, and then you know, Smasher and Bufo walk up from opposite sides of the frame, and their heads are cut off because they're so much taller than Eiffel.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to their profiles, but then Eiffel's cut off, like, at the nose, and they give him the number, and they leave one at a time, and the final frame is still Eiffel cut off at the nose, looking, like, incredibly perturbed. And it's just, it shows you, like, oh, here's this, like, little dude. He's been intimidated by these, like, random oafish guys. Except they weren't intimidating him. They were saying, we think you'd make a really good couple with our friend. There's, I think, a lot of aesthetic irony going on there.
Oh, that, yeah.
That's, like, the most pretentious thing I've ever said. But... but it's true. I mean, like, just the images that you're seeing, and then it's, like, so adorable.
It's very woofable.
Yeah.
Do you want to get down and rate this?
Sure.
All right. Why don't you go first?
Okay, I'm going to give this a 4. I actually really liked this. I had a fun time reading it, and, you know, we were just talking about how, like, genre-wise, we'd almost pin it like a rom-com. But if I'm thinking about it, I know that this is a fictional character, obviously, because, you know, obviously. It's like magical realism, right? But yeah. The way that it seems written to me is very similar to a lot of the more humorous autobio comic authors that I read.
Huh.
And I think that's a nice structure. It's like, here's a story from this guy's life. And it has a funny ending, but it's just, it's like an anthology of funny oaf stories. And over time, they tell the larger story of how he met and went on a date with Eiffel. But then I think also, like, the bonus content is so sweet. So, oh, there's one part that I think one of my favorite things here is realization I had reading the bonus content, where earlier we see Lil Papa talking about how he's dating Trophy.
Yeah.
And I don't know why the guy's name is Trophy yet. And yep. I don't know why Oaf is so disturbed yet. And that is where I find out that Lil Papa is actually Oaf's father, or adopted father. But then you read to the short stories at the end, and it turns out Oaf met Trophy by peeing on him in a urinal trough.
Yep.
And I was like, ah, yes, I would be very disconcerted if I peed on a man in a urinal trough and then he started dating my father. That would seem really weird to me. So I get that. But it's just those little tie-ins where they're, like, Ed Luce builds this universe that's just so utterly charming. I don't know if I'd recommend this to everybody, because I know that a lot of people that I know tend to read more like the Cape comics and such, and I think that this is so far out. But if you're just looking for a good book, like, I would totally have this as, like, you know, have a drink, sit down for a nice quiet afternoon, read this. I absolutely recommend it for that. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was adorable, and I liked all the characters, and I thought they were really well built up, even though they each had, you know, some of them had such little time, but we got to learn so much about who they were. So I thought characterization in this was really good, and I enjoyed the art, so I'll give it a 4.
I want to give this is tough for me, because I want to read it again in a more serious fashion. Because I went into this expecting something light and fun. So then I read it in a light and fun, like I was saying earlier, light and fun way. And I missed whatever critical things could have been in here that would have enhanced my reading. But you mentioned the stories at the end, and probably because I was rushing to finish this in time for the show, I just saw them as tacked on. But you use the term magical, or what is it, fantastical realism?
Magical realism.
Yeah, to describe this world a little bit. And I think what happens is that Ed Luce wrote the story of Oeuvable Oaf and invented all these characters, and in writing the story and inventing the characters and writing the characters, fleshed the characters out in his mind and wanted to put these stories down so that you could understand these characters better and get that there was a larger world around Oaf to make the whole thing feel more dynamic. And part of me really wishes that this were not an ongoing, but that there would be a Wovable Oaf 2.
There is one.
There is? Okay, because this feels like a way more fleshed out world than what we get. Like, I can tell there's more going on in this, Francisco, I think it, I think he writes in his online bio.
I think
there's way more of that going on than he's letting on. There's so much more in his head.
Just for your reference, I am really glad now that I was searching around the Fantagraphics website, because there will be, in November of this year, Wovable Oaf Blood and Metal. And it's a collection of short stories featuring tales of Oaf's formative childhood years.
All right.
I'm excited to read that.
Yeah, see, that I think... I don't know how much I like this, but I want to read more in this world, if that makes... It's so weird. Mm-hmm. Because I'm put off by the overt sexuality. It's just not my jam. But so much of this was fun and funny and quirky that I'm going to give it a 3.5. I think I said 3 earlier. Okay. I'll give it a 3.5. Because I still don't know what the fuck I read, necessarily. Like, there's a huge thing where they... Like, his cats pass his hairball on from generation to generation.
Yeah.
And humanity falls, and the cats become intelligent bipeds, and they reincarnate him from the hairball that's been passed on from cat to cat, so that he can fight the dog hordes that surround San Francisco. And it's like, what the fuck is this?
Did you catch Lion Cat in there?
Yes, Saga? I did.
I love that.
There's a lot of really cute nods and references in here. Some of which I got that then made me realize that there's a whole lot more that I'm not getting. Like when he goes to the venue to see Ejaculoid, one of the first panels of people hanging out is General Zod and General Zod's cronies from Superman 2. And I was like, is that fucking General Zod? And then one of them makes a mention about Jor-El. I know, that's fucking General Zod. And then there's like 3 more panels of references like that. And I'm like, fuck, I am not getting half of these. But on a weird meta kind of level, Oaf is getting the references.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Which I think just goes back a little bit more into my what the fuck is going on here. But yeah, I want to read this again. Maybe because I might get some more of those references. But also, I really do. I liked Pavel, and Pavel and his interactions were cute. But I think there's more going on. There's more going on with his story and the reason that it's included than just, oh, look at this cute insane cat and what is going on in an insane cat's head. I think there's more going on there, and I think there's more going on. This is such a cute, light, fun story. I don't want to say there's definitely an allegory with the rock-faced cats in the orphanage and how they are ganging up, and there's the one that's getting ganged up upon. But it feels like there is. Like, is that cat that gets ganged up on, is that Oaf? And is all the other cats around, like, the cats ganging up on him, is that the way Oaf feels? That the gay culture that surrounds him is ganging up on him to not get the experience of romance that he wants. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's something like that in there, and I gotta read it again to find it.
Do it.
So yeah, 3.5. So that's it for our best of the rest, or rest of the best of 2015, whatever it is. All the stuff that was on the best of list that wasn't an Image or Marvel. Yeah, that's it. We wrapped up with Wovable Oaf. Sorry David couldn't make it, but hopefully he'll be here for our next series. So next week we're going to move on to a new series, a tribute to Darwin Cook. Darwin Cook is one of my favorite comic book artists and one of my favorite creators. I've met him in person. He was a really nice guy. And I in a lot of ways. I'm really, really sad and disappointed at his passing. So I want to read a couple of his comics for the show because I realize we've only read one before, and it was a Catwoman story, which is really great, is how Darwyn Cook revitalized the Catwoman character and gave her the character design that carried on for another 15 years after that comic was written. So that was a great one to read, but I feel like we should read more. So we're going to do 4 episodes on Darwyn Cook after this, mostly because I couldn't narrow it down. There's 2 that I've read and know that I liked, and 2 that I haven't read and want to read. So we're going to read DC, The New Frontier. It's a 6-issue miniseries written in 2004. It collects issues 1-6 and the Justice League, The New Frontier special from 2008. You can get it in 2 trades for cheaper, but I would say just get the New Frontier complete edition. It's a nice collection. I'd buy it. It's I say only 6 issues, but it's like 450 pages. So it's a hefty one, but we're going to read that one. And then we're going to read Before Watchmen, The Minutemen special. Watchmen is a comic that we have famously said we are never going to read for the show, and we are never going to fucking read it for the show, so do not ask.
Wait. We didn't?
We have never done Watchmen, okay. And I never want to talk about Watchmen, because it is... I just do not want to do Watchmen.
I was I thought we did, but it was V for Vendetta.
Yeah, we did V for Vendetta. We did a series on Alan Moore, and we did not read Watchmen. And we never will. But a couple years ago, I think 3 years ago, DC did this thing called Before Watchmen about when all of the heroes were still heroes in the Watchmen world. And everybody was like, this is gotta be the dumbest money grab thing possible. And for the majority of it, it was the dumbest money grab thing possible. But Darwyn Cooks was a standout, and Amanda Connor actually did one too that was also a standout. And they're collected together. It's Before Watchmen, Minutemen, and Silk Spectre. We're going to read the Minutemen half. That's the half written by Darwyn Cook. It collects 6 issues of the 6-issue run of Before Watchmen and Minutemen. It's supposed to be one of the few that is actually really, really good to come out of Before Watchmen and not a money grab like the rest of them were. So we're going to do that. And then we're going to read Parker the Hunter. This is one that I hadn't heard about until he passed, and a bunch of articles talked about it. And I'll read you the synopsis. The Hunter is the story of a man who hits New York head-on like a shotgun blast to the chest, betrayed by the woman he loved and double-crossed by his partner in crime. Parker makes his way cross-country with only one thought burning in his mind: to exact his revenge. And it's like gritty noir detective kind of thing, but redone. I think it's originally a novel, and Darwyn Cook turned it into a comic book. So I'm psyched to read that one, because that means that it was a pet project that he really liked. Which means, if you know anything about comics, if you're talented, if a talented comic book artist does a pet project from their heart, that art's going to be phenomenal. So I'm excited to read Parker. And they're going to wrap it up with Batman Ego. Batman Ego was a run, was it? Let me see. Batman Ego is a graphic novel from the year 2000. And it's collected in this trade called Batman Ego and Other Tales that has some Catwoman in it. But we're going to just read the Batman Ego. But buy the trade. It's really good. Buy that one too. That one I've also read. But yeah. That's it for this week. That's next week. DC New Frontier, the six issue thing, New Frontier by Darwyn Cook. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye.